Hey there. In 2018, my local chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention in Western New York sent me to a soul shop for church leaders training in Buffalo. The goal of the training was to help communities, churches, and individuals impacted by suicide. Since 2018, I have attended two other Soul Shop for Leaders workshops. This spring, I've been invited to become a trainer for Soul Shop. With the help of HSP listeners, I'll be attending this training in Little Rock, Arkansas at the end of April. With the help of this training, I'll be able to offer workshops for church leaders and youth workers to support efforts of suicide prevention and to help churches and individuals impacted by suicide. To contribute to the expenses of this training, go to www.buymeacoffee.com/Tara L. Eastman. For more information on the Soul Shop Movement, go to www.soulshopmovement.org. Thank you for your help in this important work in the church and the world. And if you contribute, please make a note that this is for Soul Shop training. Thank you for being a partner in faith-based suicide prevention to equip faith community leaders and congregations to minister to those impacted by suicide. Welcome to Holy Shenanigans. I'm your host, Pastor Tara Lamont Eastman, pastor, podcaster, and practitioner of Holy Shenanigans. Throughout the season of Lent, I've been talking to guests about the different ways they engage with their faith or spirituality. We've learned that there are different ways to pray, and that art can be a part of that, as well as writing. That writing can be a spiritual practice. I've been writing since I was really young, whether it was my diary or in a journal. Writing was something that connected for me. It was a way for me to settle down and to process my thoughts, my feelings, and even to write to God. Yes, even write to God. Within the pages of my journal, I would ask big questions about life, the universe, and everything. And how fortunate it's been for me to connect with Reverend Dr. Eileen Campbell Reed, a fellow spiritual journaler and writer. Eileen is a visiting associate professor at Union Theological Seminary. She is co-director of the Learning Pastoral Imagination Project. She is the author of the book Pastoral Imagination, Bringing the Practice of Ministry to Life, and is the founder and host of the 3-Minute Ministry Mentor and the Writing Table. So let's learn some more about how writing is a spiritual practice with our special guest, the Reverend Dr. Eileen Campbell Reed. How are you doing today?
Great. Thanks, Tara. It's great to be with you.
So we are here today to talk about spiritual practices that are evergreen. Even though we may be recording this conversation just before and in the season of Lent where people are giving things up, Eileen and I wanted to talk with you today about spiritual practices that are going to be with you throughout all year and hopefully throughout your whole life, and specific to the spiritual practice of writing. So Eileen, could you say a little bit about who you are in the world?
Sort of the umbrella over what I do is the phrase I picked up about 7 or 8 years ago as an academic entrepreneur. I teach at Union Theological Seminary in the city of New York. I also am an ordained pastor, minister in the Progressive Baptist tradition. I've been teaching for about 15 years in various seminaries and divinity schools in medium security prisons and some undergraduates. So I teach mostly pastoral and practical theology. I also occasionally teach about writing, teach about topics related to the care of other people and to the practice of research. So as you can imagine with what I just said, if I'm doing teaching and research and I'm interested in things like care and also ethnography, I'm writing all the time. I'm writing pretty much every day of my life. my self-understanding as a writer really started early. I won my first writing contest in, I think I was the third, maybe the fourth grade.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was very proud of winning that contest, getting a big ribbon on the thing I wrote. Pretty sure it was fourth grade because it was a essay contest about the bicentennial of the country. And so I wrote that essay and I still remember a line, which was, "Don't give America a jump rope and expect her to jump from sea to shining sea."
A good line for a fourth grader, wasn't it?
That's a good line. Yeah.
Well, and the gifts you should not give America. And then, of course, then the things you should give America. Very idealistic, starry-eyed 10-year-old writing about the birthday of the country. And I guess at that point, you know, I knew I was a writer and I was recognized as a writer, but I never thought of it as something I would make a living doing or that I would have as a job. It was just something I loved. So I adopted writing as my avocation. And of course, while you're a student, growing up, going to elementary, middle, high school, college, seminary, somebody's asking you to write something every single day.
Yeah.
So you don't even think about it. You just put your name and the date on the top of the paper and you start writing. But as I got older, I came to recognize, especially as I got to seminary and I began to prepare for that more kind of public writing that you do, not just newsletters, but writing for sermons. I began to write for publications while I was really in seminary and get paid a little bit for that writing. But still, I could see that I was never going to amount to like a career choice. But more and more and more, it's integrated into what I do all the time. And so I not only write for myself, but about 10 or 11 years ago, began coaching other writers, doing mentoring with seminary students in their writing and in their practice of ministry, which almost always includes some writing. So it's very interwoven into everything I do. And I certainly think of it as one of my most important spiritual practices. In fact, right beside me here, I'll hold up for you to see, listeners can imagine, a journal. I keep a journal near me all the time. I started keeping a journal when I was in seminary and I read the book by Richard Foster, The Celebration of Discipline.
Yep, Celebration of Discipline.
Wonderful book. And for me, the spiritual practice I wanted to adopt because we were asked to, you know, think about that. And then I went out on my first field education assignment. I had to have a spiritual practice for that field ed experience. And I chose, I don't think he actually has journaling as one of his 12, but that for me was the spiritual practice I wanted to do. So every day I would make entries in that journal. I'd already been kind of a diary keeper before then, but since that time, I've never been without a journal. And that was it. That was over 30 years ago. I've filled up, I don't know, I haven't counted, scores, dozens, well, many over 100, maybe 200. I don't know.
I don't know whether it was something that I saw in Little House on the Prairie when I was a kid, you know, that keeping of a journal, but that came to me pretty young too. And I think it took a long time for me to understand that as a spiritual practice.
Mm.
But it is a space for myself. If I can get that little pocket of time by hand writing something out, it helps me to slow down and to then be better engaged in my day.
I would say when I started keeping a journal, I really thought of it as like very self-contained journal for spiritual writing, for prayers, for spiritual questions and reflections. But I'd say probably by the end of that summer, I realized, oh, you know, actually this journal's going to be more about everything. I don't have to cordon off my spiritual life into a little book where I write things down. Everything about my life can go into that book, and it does.
Yeah.
Brainstorming, work, family stories, it's just all in there because my spirituality is integrated into the whole of my life, and the journal is sort of an externalized form of that, I guess. I don't compartmentalize my life that way. My life's just one giant mess, all written into journal books.
Thank you so much for saying that, because in my own practice, I often try to be like, oh, here's the sectioned off notebook. You know, this is for this part and this is for this part. And I have let that go. And I have a notebook and I'm like, okay, here's the day. Whatever happens, just dump it on the page. It's totally fine.
It's also kind of a good practice of detachment. I mean, it's only that thick. I can only write so much in there. And then I have to put that one down and move on to that next book. It's blank page and starting over. So that's another gift of it. I hadn't really maybe said out loud before, but it's not about writing everything down and hanging on to it.
Yeah.
It's about writing it down and letting it go.
If folks are starting this practice, what would be your general direction or instruction?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hi, this is Tara for Holy Shenanigans Podcast. I hope this space is an opportunity for you to pause, have a nice cup of coffee, and relax. If you would like to support the work of this podcast, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/Tara L. Eastman.
Oh, I think anytime we start a new practice, there's a couple of things that I highly recommend. One is, as best you can, try it in community. Even if you're like a person who does things on your own, and by in community, that can mean any number of things. Just talking to some friends about it. It can be you have a small group at your congregation. It can be you can't get a small group, but you find some online people who are journal keepers. Whatever it takes to find some affinity group or some community, because spiritual practices are not really meant to be done alone. Even the desert mothers and desert fathers who we have their sayings, who wrote down, or really they didn't write them down. Other people gathered around them, took care of them, and wrote down the things they said. So they had a community around them, even though they were isolated. The hermits who lived through the Middle Ages, they had people who came and fed them and took care of them and listened to what they were learning in their deep practices of prayer or meditation or whatever spiritual practices they were doing. So I'm just saying all practices, even keeping a private journal, are communal. Secondly, I'd say get some good tools. Pick a journal you like that you enjoy writing in. Choose a good pen or pencil or art tools, whatever. You're going to draw pictures in your journal. Have some good, beautiful pens or pencils or whatever makes that work for you so that you enjoy it. You look forward to it. You want to take part in it. And then I try to tell people, if you're going to try something new, commit to 7 days. If you can do it for 7 days, then commit to the 21 days. If you keep doing it for 21 days, maybe it's going to stick. And also, I do go through some periods of time where maybe I don't pick up my journal quite as often or daily, and it's okay. Something I learned from Richard Foster. If you're doing it legalistically, if you're doing a practice in order to keep the practice and you're all caught up in whether you check every box every day, it's not really working as a spiritual practice. It's just adding to your sense of obligation or guilt. It should bring you liberation and freedom, not a greater sense of guilt or shame because you're not doing it the right way. Now, obligation is a good thing, but it should be in a spirit of loving obligation, not I'm here to, you know, be hard on myself. So no legalism. It should lead to freedom. It should be liberating when you do a spiritual practice. That doesn't mean it won't be hard or it won't be challenging. It just means ultimately you're not there to police yourself. You're there to free your heart and your spirit and your mind.
That distinction is really important. I'm always up for a holy shenanigans story. Do you have a recent holy shenanigans story that you would like to share with our audience today?
I took a group of seminary students, along with a couple of other faculty members, to Thailand in 2016. I had a lot going on in my life, but, you know, 10 days in Thailand, just what you need to throw in the middle of a book launch.
Of course.
We traveled around quite a bit, and one of the days there, we flew north to Chiang Mai, and then we got back on a plane, came back to the main city where we were staying, Bangkok, and as we were arriving back at our hotel, I had a sudden moment of panic, and I was like, I put my backpack in the top compartment of the plane, and I didn't get it out. And it has my journal in it.
Oh, no.
Is all the other stuff. But I really need a journal back.
Yeah.
And I was having a serious, like, oh, my gosh, I'm never going to see that again. It's going to be awful. And we walked through the door, and there was a friend of mine who I was totally not expecting. He's from Thailand, but I didn't know he was going to be there. There stands Saroj Sorjakul. And I'm like, Sarosh, oh my gosh, I need your help. I have left my bag with my journal in it on the plane back at the, you know, I got off the airplane. You can't go back, right?
Yes.
He's like, okay, let's call them. And he speaks the language. So he starts talking to them. We got back in the van. We drop back to the airport. We go through this whole maze of things and they hand me my bag. It's there. I just never thought I would see that bag or that journal again. It really didn't have a lot else in the bag, like my passport or anything significant, just some toiletries or whatever. The holy, I think, is there, like my friend Sarosh, surprising us, being available, ready to help, speaking the right language. But we have to be open to it. I could have just thrown my hands up and given up and said, oh, I'm never going to see that again. Terrible. But instead, it ended up to be a very grace-filled kind of ending.
That's a beautiful way to talk about lost things or having them in community being returned back to us. In life, I think that there can be times that we become so busy with the things that are just life that we forget or lose or misplace those spiritual practices that fill us up.
I've certainly had the experience of at times in my life when I needed something desperately, like felt a deep need for something, a spiritual practice has presented itself and become what meets that need. With centering prayer, with the journaling, with walking, spoken prayers that are more of a mantra. The holy presents things to us at times when we need them, but we do have to be open and have our eyes ready to see what's there, because it's one of my own personal deep, like I call blueprint stories, that I don't believe I'll get the help I need. Mm-hmm. So every time I do, it's a confirmation that that story is not the deepest story in me. There's a deeper story of grace and provision, sustenance that's available, but I have to overcome that blueprint story that I won't get the help I need to believe it's actually really right there for me, but I have to pay attention, I have to open myself to what that help might really be.
Yeah. Yes. So we've talked a lot about the how-tos and the whys that writing is a spiritual practice. And you've talked about how community is a big part of that. And one of the ways that I know you is through the writing table.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you could say more about what that is and how that can perhaps help people establish a spiritual practice of writing.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of my favorite parts of my day. Every weekday, I host the writing table. I have some other co-hosts who also pitch in. I'm not literally there every weekday of a year, but most of them I am. I began coaching writers back in about 2013 when I was working with a group while I was working to finish my first academic book, Anatomy of a Schism. I was part of a small group online, but it was a kind of thing where you never actually saw or talked to another person, but you logged in every day and logged your progress and you gave each other encouragement through written notes. And so about 6 or 8 months into that, the group came to me and asked me, would I become a writing coach and basically give encouragement to all these other people? And so I began doing that. They had a chat function and some other things, but we never saw each other. We never talked to each other. And then I had a group for so long that I began to actually invite them to meet with me occasionally on Zoom, and we would write together or just hang out, talk and talk about our writing. We were all academics. And then the pandemic came along in 2020. And I was noticing how many of my students and my friends and my colleagues were struggling to write or just focus on anything. And so I said, I'm going to just see if some people want to get together and write. So that's how it got started. We just had this growing community of people who loved coming, sitting together for an hour. We start with breathing. So it's very much an intention setting and spiritual kind of attention to writing. But you can write anything you want. People write everything at the writing table. They write sermons, they write blogs, they write books, they write newsletter articles, they write poetry, they write to-do lists, they do planning. Nobody polices what anybody writes, but we're there in the virtual space holding each other accountable in a very gentle, kind way. And then we share our strategies for how we're getting our writing done. And all of this is based in some research that a man named Robert Boyce did for about 30 years. He studied writers and found out how they can really be the most efficient, productive, He was studying academic writers who needed to write for tenure, but his principles work no matter what kind of writing we're doing, to form a good habit of writing. Habit, practice, you can call it what you like, but having some community around our writing makes it so much less lonely, so much less isolating, and so much more supported and encouraged. I do some friendly coaching, kind of low key coaching. Along the way, I've also many years ago started picking up individual writers as who I coach in their writing projects. Those things are part of the writing table. We meet 5 mornings a week. And then in Lent, which I know when this plays, it will probably be the end of Lent, but we've had an additional time every day for writers who want to write during Lent. So we do a special writing table times, and that will probably be ongoing. We'll continue to have special seasons at the writing table for people to join. So it's really very life-giving to me. I get to sit down and do my writing alongside other people, but also I'm hosting the space that other people can come to. And sometimes people are just journaling, spiritual writing, writing by hand, all kinds of things that people find the space that generates for them. So truly life-giving for many people, not just me.
That's wonderful. It's kind of like a desert mother, desert father in technology space.
Yeah, that's right. Right. We're spread out all over about 9 different time zones.
Wow.
And yet we show up in one virtual space. Yeah. And we're there on the screen for each other. We turn our video and our audio off while we write, but in the beginning, the middle, the end, we're there to see and talk to each other. So yeah, very supportive way to make good use of technology.
Yeah. I love those intersections of creative and spiritual practices that can be aided with technology. If we could use these things for good, what good there would be in the world.
It's a new era of ministry that we're living in. Part of that is because everything has the potential to be hybrid at this point. We used to say about technology in the church, "Ooh, that's terrible. That's scary stuff that we're too disconnected. We don't want to do that. Like, we want to be real and in person and live and all that." We poo-pooed technology in many churches. And the pandemic just totally upended that. What I say now is don't think of technology as bad. Please think of it as new. And you don't really know fully yet, none of us do, what capacities it has. It will have its downsides. Well, being in person has some downsides as well, like the COVID virus, like for people with social anxiety. Being in person is not a safe place for them, but being together virtually is. We have trade-offs, but most importantly, we've been doing in person for thousands of years. We know how to do that. We've been doing technology connection and community very short time. We got a lot yet to learn about that. And so think of it as new and how can we do it better? And writing table is a good example of how we're trying to do that.
In my own process of seminary, I was in one of the very first cohorts of people doing things in a hybrid model. And so I just thought, this is the way that the world works. It's been a gift, especially in response to COVID-19 and all of those things. But even before that, I remember taking an undergrad college class that was called Digital Storytelling. And it was one of the most enriching, connective aha moments for me as a person who writes and is a creative person, but also a person who has a spiritual life. And I'm like, oh my goodness, digital storytelling. And that was such a lifeline for me as a writer because it helped me connect with other people. I'm part of a group that was Mondays, sleeping with bread was the practice that we did. What is the bread we're going to hold on to? What is the bread we're going to let go of? We would blog, and then we'd encourage each other, write little notes every Monday, you know? So I just love the way that these technologies can be a gift of connection,
right?
For folks that probably would let go of these practices because they think, you know, what good is it doing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We need to remind each other that it is doing good.
So much good. And connecting people who otherwise might feel just so alone and isolated without the virtual connections that are life-giving for them.
So where can people find the Writing Table and you, Eileen?
My website is eileencampbellreid.org. We produce episodes every week and new ideas about ministry, about spirituality, about learning, about writing. You'll find all kinds of information at my website. I've been blogging there for 14 years, and there's a lot there. Search up all kinds of things. We've just launched a new course site called courses.eileencampbellreid.org. And at that site is where the writing table will live in a long-term way. We also have something we call Free Write Friday. Anybody can come on Friday and just try out the writing table, see if you like it. Costs nothing. You need to sign up for the link, and then we send you the link the night before, and you join us on Fridays. We have a steady stream of people who try the writing table or just commit to coming on Fridays. Anybody can do that. Just go to my website and search up writing table, and you will be able to sign up for Free Write Fridays. We'd love to have anybody who wants to give it a try.
As a person who started that way, I am very thankful for Free Write Fridays. And thank you so much for making that accessible to everybody to just try out.
Yeah, that's what we need with spiritual practice, right? A chance to try them out, test them out, see if it's calling to us in a longer term way, for sure.
Yes, yes, indeed. Do you have an invocation or a blessing to help us to remember these gifts of spiritual practices, or to perhaps have the Desert Mothers and Fathers bring our satchel back to us so that we can journal?
I'm going to share a saying from one of the Desert Fathers. Throughout Lent at the writing table, we've had writing prompts for everyone. That's part of the special thing about Lent at the writing table, is that we had a writing prompt for every day. And so I'm going to share one of those from Abba Isidore of Palusia, who died in 450, a desert father, and he said this: "To live without speaking is better than to speak without living. For the former who lives rightly does good by even their silence, but the latter does no good even when they speak. When words and life correspond to one another, they are together the whole of philosophy," or we might translate in the 21st century, the whole of a way of life. And the question for that day was, how do your life and your writing correspond? In what ways might you bring them together more into alignment? So I hope those questions might be something you would mull over. Those of you who are listening to our conversation today, think about how your writing and your life mutually support one another and come into alignment so that they are each life-giving to the other, the way you live and the way you write.
Thank you so much. That is a wonderful invitation and invocation to all of the fellow Holy Shenanigators out there longing for a safe and sacred spiritual practice. Thank you so much, Eileen. As always, it's great to talk with you and to continue this always sacred, never stuffy journey that I like to call Holy Shenanigans.
I am your Holy Shenanigans muse, Tara Lamont Eastman, pastor, podcaster, and practitioner of Holy Shenanigans. Thank you to Eileen Campbell-Reid for joining us this week for Holy Shenanigans that surprise, encourage, redirect, and turn life upside down, all in the name of love. Thanks also to Ian Eastman for sound editing, and to you, HSP listeners, for supporting our podcast by way of www.buymeacoffee.com/Tara L. Eastman. If you would like to learn more about how writing is a spiritual practice or how to join the writing table, go to Eileen Campbell Reid's website, eileencampbellreid.org. Until next time, may you be well, may you be at peace, and may you know that you are beloved. Hey there, friends of Holy Shenanigans Podcast. I'm thrilled to share that I'll be recording live from the Wild Goose Festival this July, 11 through 14. Wild Goose Festival is a transformational community grounded in faith-inspired social justice. It's a one-of-a-kind gathering that brings together activists, artists, and seekers from all walks of life to explore justice and art, spirituality, and community. The festival will take place at Van Hoy Farms in Union Grove, North Carolina, and I'd love for you to join me there. From engaging workshops to inspired panels and interactive experiences, Wild Goose has something for everyone. So mark your calendars and let's be part of this incredible community that is committed to making a positive impact in the world. For more information, visit www.wildgoosefestival.org. As one of my followers, use a discount code A-TLE24. That's A-TLE24. And you'll get $50 off the price of an adult weekend ticket. We will see you there at the Wild Goose Festival to connect, to build community, and to work for social justice.